You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. You're listening to Praxis on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. I'm your host, Taylor, and this week I'm bringing you interviews from California, Utah, and Colorado as part of the Praxis Summer Roadshow. The common element here today is toxics, the processes that release them into communities and how those communities react. You'll hear from an anti-fracking activist, a midwife speaking up about deaths in her town, and a mother and environmental scholar trying to educate her community about lingering radioactive waste that companies would rather see swept under the rug. We'll hear first from David Braun, one of a team of activists who outlawed fracking successfully in the state of New York. He's returned to his home state of California to attempt to pass a similar ban there. He explains how he got involved and what fracking really looks like in terms of pollution and ecological impact. Here's David Braun.
My name is David Braun, and I work with Californians Against Fracking and grassroots organizations in California fighting fracking and extreme oil extraction, and even conventional oil extraction, which we're finding is a lot more toxic than was previously thought. And I previously was one of the founders of New Yorkers Against Fracking and have and continue to also work with Americans Against Fracking, which I'm also a co-founder of.
Great. And how did you get involved in that work?
About 10 years ago, I had my own kind of spiritual awakening. I was running a business in New York City and realized that I didn't want to really make money for bad people anymore, and thought that I wanted to make a difference in the world. And ended up working on the Obama campaign, and ended up working on trying to get healthcare passed. And then we heard about this thing called fracking, which was on the horizon for New York. And the more we found out about it, the more frightened myself and many people in the community were. And so I just kind of picked it out and said, this is the worst thing I've ever heard of, injecting toxic chemicals into the ground, poisoning water, and doing this at really high pressure to fracture rock and make the earth more permeable. What could be worse than that? And I'm sure there are things, but it just seemed like it was the worst thing in the world. And so I said, with my kind of newfound conviction of wanting to do more than just make money for myself and for bad people, I decided that this is what I wanted to work on, and this is what I was going to dedicate my life to, was fighting fracking and an economic system that would make this seem practical. There is a huge difference between what they call conventional drilling for oil and gas and what they're saying is unconventional, which fracking is an unconventional process. So traditional drilling, you find a pocket or oil or gas in the ground. You drill straight into that pocket. That oil and gas comes up. You're done. That's it. It's not invasive. It's fairly low impact, although you still are putting a hole into the ground. But fracking is a whole different beast entirely. They drill down for about a mile or more into the earth. Then they do directional drilling. So they turn that drill bit and they turn it horizontally and go horizontally through tightly packed shale formations. And to basically what they need to do is, they're in these shale formations, there are small pockets of oil or small pockets of ground of gas in the ground. And so what they need to do is actually literally blow up or shatter the shale formations so that they can release these tiny pockets of oil or these tiny pockets of gas. So to do that, they use about 1 to 8 million gallons of water. They mix it with about 400, on average, about 400 pounds. They say 200,000 pounds to 660,000 pounds of chemicals. And they take that mixture and they shove it into the ground at about 10, on average, anywhere from 5 to 15,000 pounds of pressure per square inch. So it takes about 160 pounds of 160 psi or pounds per square inch to break the strongest bone in my body, which is my femur in my leg. So that takes 160 pounds of pressure per square inch. So they're doing this upwards to 100 times the amount of that pressure with that, on average, 400,000 pounds of toxic chemicals. Now, of those chemicals, we can't identify all of them. We don't know what they all are. But of the ones that we can identify, we know that about 32% cause cancer, 43% are genetic disruptors, and 58% are immune suppressants. So that's for each time they frack a well. They're using that amount of chemicals, that amount of water to fracture the earth. And then they told us that they wanted to come in and do that about 100,000 times over in New York State alone, which was just this astronomical amount of toxic chemicals. Mm-hmm. And so that was the difference between what fracking is this wholly invasive practice, but they don't have conventional reserves left. And so that's why they have to do these crazy practices like fracking, like acidizing, where they're injecting toxic chemicals or hydrochloric acid directly into the ground. The whole idea that this fractures the earth, it makes the ground more permeable. These chemicals and even some of the volatile organic compounds that are down already in the earth then migrate their way into our waterways. They are released into the atmosphere. The methane is released into the atmosphere, causing greater climate change. So it's just like this toxic process. And when you tell people what this really is, they're shocked to hear it. But meanwhile, guys at Halliburton and Dick Cheney, who got the Halliburton loophole written into law, right, where they exempted fracking from all of the national laws that were meant to keep us safe from fracking. So the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water, the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and the Superfund Law, and some other laws and regulations that were hard-won fights intended to keep us safe from fracking, somehow they got those key laws and provisions exempted from fracking, which is like the kind of fracking is the exact process that they created those laws to defend us from. So to have it be exempted is crazy. New York, you had everybody kind of standing up in arms about this because everybody who drinks water or breathes air had an investment against fracking. And so we found ourselves allied with faith leaders and chefs and doctors and nurses and, all of these different constituencies. We said, well, we have to do something about this. And we even had environmentalists that would tell us, you're never going to stop fracking from coming into New York State. And, our jaws would drop. And and we'd say, well, thank you so much for your opinion. Now, please get out of the way. We have work to do. Because getting fracked wasn't an option for us. Having those chemicals go into our water supply, it was a public health crisis. And we didn't really have the science at the time, but we knew enough to say that we can't let this in. And so we just did really basic organizing, just kind of, we did a lot of, film screenings and talking with our neighbors and getting out the word. The oil industry put a lot of money into ads on TV. You can see them on national news every night, and you never know what they're quite selling you, other than that they're saying that, these new technologies and, they don't ever use the word fracking, but they tell you it's safe. Mm-hmm. And
that natural gas is so clean.
And natural gas is so clean, right? They don't tell you that they're poisoning millions of gallons of water and that people are getting sick and having infections bursting through their skin as a result of having fracking going on. But, they're giving you this glossed over thing. They're not telling you that every time they poison somebody's water supply and they pay them off, usually small amounts of money because people are so desperate after they've had their water supply poisoned that they make them sign a non-disclosure agreement, which means they can no longer talk about it afterwards, right? So there's another voice that they have silenced whose water has been poisoned as a result of fracking. They don't tell you any of the side effects. So we just jumped into it, though. We just knew we had to stop it. And we did everything and anything that we could, in, you know, within peaceful means and within lawful means to do it. Although we did end up, you know, we were lucky in New York.
Again, that was David Braun with Californians Against Fracking, and you're listening to Praxis. Every place has its own challenges when it comes to organizing, and rural areas, where toxic projects are often cited, pose unique questions and answers for residents there. I traveled to Vernal, Utah to meet Donna Young, a veteran midwife who's raised questions about toxic pollution in her community after seeing a spike in miscarriage, stillbirth, and birth defects. She's been profiled in Rolling Stone, Newsweek, and elsewhere, and she talks here about what she witnessed with babies and mothers in Vernal, what her concerns are, and how the experience has changed her. Here's Donna Young.
I'm Donna Young, and I am the midwife from the Vernal, Utah area.
And I guess you've recently become known through some articles and stuff about that have really focused on fracking, the fracking that's happening south of Vernal, and a spike that you were seeing in stillbirths, miscarriages, other maternal birth defects, and the rest. Can you talk a little bit about those spikes that you saw and also the way they've been reported?
Correct. We started watching the situation after I had the first loss of my 19-year career, and found that there were more losses than what we would have expected. So we started going back, and we went back as far as 2010, and we found that there were as many deaths in 2013 alone as there was in 2010, 11, and 12 combined.
Hmm. And then where did you go from there when you found that information?
A month after we had our loss, I went with my son, who's 23 years old, to the director of the Tri-County Health and ask him what he thought could be causing the problem, not because I was trying to sound an alarm. I was trying to find out what was going on so I could find a way to protect my women and my babies.
Mm-hmm. And what did they say there?
He told me that the county officials did not want to hear anything about it and that he had the same concerns. He says that if he could give any advice to my girls, it would be to move out of Vernal. Wow. Which most of my girls are college educated. They own their own homes, and they can't just pack up and leave. Mm-hmm. They have to, the economy is down. So I was searching for a way to help my girls get through a bad situation with the best possible outcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's also not a very long-term solution, you know. Correct. To just move out, because that implies that, you know, babies and pregnant women being, as you say on your website, canaries in the coal mine.
Correct.
That kind of implies that everyone should move.
Exactly.
Out and leave it a ghost town or change something about what's happening there. So
correct.
What's your point on your website, just protectthebabies.com?
Protectthebabies.com.
A variety of health concerns that are there. Can you just lay those out for people? Like,
the first thing that people want to look at is the oil industry. And the oil industry may or may not play a role in it. People who are... There's never been a ground-level study done that I know of for air quality. And most of the tests that have been done 1,000 foot in the air. And if what I understand is correct, the gases lay in layers, and the heavier gases settle closer to the ground. So the gases on the bottom 10 feet are the ones that would be affecting people's health. But the tests have all been done 1,000 feet in the air.
Hmm.
And so they're not touching the same gases. The county does not want monitors in the city and in the county. They want They don't want any public awareness. They don't, you know, they want things kept quiet. And
do you think that's out of concern for jobs, for a perception that will drive out the industry and take jobs with it? Or
I think it has more to do with revenue that the city and county are getting from the oil industry, which is viable. You know, other than they shouldn't put money above people's lives. I believe that there is an absolute way to have a good, sound economy and healthy people at the same time. I don't think we have to sacrifice one to have the other one. Along with the oil and gas industry, there's several other issues that it could be. It could be in the water. The peak happened within 24 months after Fukushima happened. There are people that believe that the problem is radiation and that it's not just our area, that it is wider spread. There's a possibility that it's in the water. There is a possibility that it has to do with the effects of the evaporation ponds.
Can you explain what those are briefly?
For evaporation ponds are where they take the chemicals that are used in drilling. And they, when they go into the ground, it's called product. When it comes back out of the ground, it's called toxic waste. And then they're limited on where and how they can dispose of that. So their solution to that is to make these great big pits that are as long as several football fields. And they will run anywhere from 800 yards to 1,600 yards long. And then they put the black plastic down in the bottom of that. The heat from the sun is drawn into the black plastic. It is evaporated up. It spreads out. And then when it cools, it condenses and comes back down, wherever that happens to be. Mm. And so those same toxic chemicals that it's illegal to dispose of in other ways end up being dispersed out over wherever it happens to land.
However fast the wind is blowing that day.
Correct.
Closer to town.
And how hot the sun is and so forth.
Wow, that's a little disturbing that that's the best solution for that waste.
Well, it's either that or there seems to be two other choices. They can re-inject it. They can put it back into a large pipe that goes directly like 6,000 feet.
Oh, no, I didn't know anything.
It goes like 6,000 feet down, which is below the water, below the other things that are being... It's 1.5 times deeper than what culinary wastewater goes into, is re-injected back. And so there's the re-injection process that is an option. I don't know what the long term is. I don't know what the other side effects to that are. But then I spoke to another man who told me that it is viable to take those toxins that come out of the ground, clean them, and use them again. So instead of getting in new product, they would actually be reusing the same chemicals over and over again. And so that might even be cheaper than having to buy new chemicals.
You would think so. And, you know, nasty as a lot of those chemicals are that are used, I mean, it's looking at proven carcinogens, really problematic chemicals in a lot of cases. But while they're doing this process, you know, they might as well do what they can to minimize the impact. And I know that when we talked on the phone, you mentioned... another concern that I want to say was agriculture related or fertilizer.
There's a phosphate mine north of town.
Okay.
And it is Simplot. And Simplot's one of the biggest in the nation for making fertilizers for agricultural purposes. Mm-hmm. And There's the chemicals that are used for blasting. The fact that the water source for 3 months out of the year-ish goes right through the center of the phosphate mine.
Oh.
And there are places where there is a gorge, and the law is that it cannot be mined within 200 feet of the water source, but they go right up to the edge of that gorge because it's 200 foot deep. So if it goes over, you see it's... And so there is a concern. I know that a lot of the environmentalists point toward it being fracking and the inversions and such, but according to the art dates, what we're seeing is that the problem is more in the spring than it is in the winter as a rule. I mean, there are problems in the winter, but the spring has been toxic.
Which would indicate the relationship to the water.
As opposed to the inversions and the air quality and so forth.
Yeah, and you have some pictures on your site, too, of some examples of tap water.
Correct.
Is this? Are you advising your girls to not drink the tap water? I mean...
I do.
Is that a concern?
Actually, I ask my girls to either drink bottled water or to buy an extremely good filter.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's quite a cocktail of possibilities.
It really is.
So has this experience, do you consider yourself, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, you're trying to protect these women and babies, as your site says. Has this experience made you into, what you would consider an activist or anything like that? Or how has it affected your outlook on things?
You know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, I would have considered myself conservative. And now, boy, there's been a lot of water under the bridge the last 2 years. And I have to say that the conservatives that I really thought would come forward and protect the babies have turned a blind eye.
There's a lot's happened in the last 2 years, and you've kind of shifted about.
I have. I really thought that people who were worried about things, we've got plenty of earth. There's a lot of wide open spaces in between towns. There's still a lot of room for farmland. I could see that this world could handle a lot more people than what it had. And I thought that they were using it for a control point or whatever, but I didn't see a problem. But when the babies started dying, and we started seeing birth defects. In 20 years, I had never seen a birth defect. My girls are very adamant about their diet. They're healthy, they're strong, they're treated more like athletes than they are disease victims. And my girls had healthy babies, high Apgars. Everything was great. In the last year or two, we've started seeing club foot, hair lip, tongue tie, you know, things that we've never seen before. And it all comes from a toxic environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I have researched these women that are not mine who have lost babies. And
them.
I researched them, and every woman that I located anything about her was a family-oriented woman who was, like, hopelessly in love with her baby, that did everything she could. These are athletic women. These are women who took pride in being healthy and doing the best they could for their families. These are not women who are single or drug addicts, who are drinking and smoking, who are not paying attention. These are women who are actually giving effort. And all except for one, I believe, was married. They simply don't fit the profile that is being portrayed about them.
Mm.
None of them do. Even the single mother was a professional woman, and she worked in the health industry.
Mm. So how are these women reacting to I mean, aside from the obvious personal reaction you'd have of...
I have had several of them call me up and ask me to add their baby to the list because you have missed my baby. My baby's birth and death is not on your website. Would you please add it? Behind the scenes, they give me all the support. Publicly, they want their names kept out of it because they're mourning and they don't want the public pressure.
Sure. So, as far as, I mean, we talked a little bit about this, but where do you think people in Vernal or towns like it, I mean, there's towns like this across the country who have had toxic sites of various kinds kind of dumped on them because they tend to be poorer places, places that are in economic depression.
Correct.
And what do you think people's breaking point is with that? Where they'll start to demand something different? I mean, is it when you can't drink your water? Is it when you can't?
The Cyril report that I posted on there, I heard about it through a comments section. I believe it was on the Rolling Stones article. And when I read through that, I see where the Vernal area pretty much 100% hits every point on there. The mental mindset of the people is very much along those lines that they'll tolerate a lot and they'll justify it until they become so aware they can't deny it. And I see them becoming more aware over the last 2 years. I believe they're making some more progress. We're seeing where we used to have maybe 50% rebel since the LA Times article came out in January. We've had far more support than we've had negative. I see a lot of the problems being political. Like if there was any honesty with the people, there would be resolution. There's no honesty. And I think that, I bet that's 90% of the problem right there.
And how do you think we can address that?
Keep shoving honesty down their throats.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much you're going to tone this down, but I really
probably won't.
I believe that that's what they need. And if I could get the money together, my intent is to go ahead and put a... air quality / radiation monitoring system throughout the city of Vernal against the county commissioners and against the city council's desires.
Just work with private citizens and land. That's cool. That's a good idea. We'll see what happens then.
We have enough clients who love and appreciate me that we can scatter monitors if we can get the funding. For the place is 10 miles long and 5 miles wide, and we can pretty much cover it.
Wow.
On private properties.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting approach to just not wait for, I mean, because you could be waiting forever. That's the problem.
They didn't ask for our permission to poison us. I'm not waiting for their permission to find a cure.
I don't know about you, but it gives me goosebumps to hear Donna say that, that they didn't ask permission to poison us. They almost never do, and it's great to hear stories of people like her who are standing up and trying to get to the bottom of things. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. That was Donna Young talking about fracking, mining, and radiation in her hometown. Let's hear now from another mother and activist, Michelle Gabrieloff Parrish, who's been working out of Boulder, Colorado to fight development on a very polluted nuclear site, Rocky Flats, and to educate people in the area about the toxic nuclear legacy of that place.
So I'm Michelle Gabrieloff Parrish, and I'm a mother of three and a wife, and I live in Superior, Colorado. And I found out after I moved to where I moved how close we were to Rocky Flats. growing up in Colorado, I'd kind of heard of rocky flats, but I didn't really know that much about it, just that maybe it's kind of a toxic site and, you know, you wouldn't maybe want to live downstream from it or something, but I didn't know that much. And I also didn't realize that the property jutted towards my house when we passed the sign that said where it was. So how I got involved, I actually was at a training with Joanna Macy in California, and she and her assistant have worked a lot with people here in Colorado around Rocky Flats, and you could tell, especially in hindsight, I can tell that this woman, Anne, was having a hard time figuring out how to approach the issue with me, you know, and as someone who's worked before on other sort of community issues, I totally recognize it now, where she was like, "You live where? How many children do you have?" And then you could see her try to calm herself down and be like, "You know, have you spoken with anybody about Rocky Flats? Or have you been involved with that at all?" And I was like, "No, I don't think it affects me. I don't think I'm that close to it." You know, and you could just sort of see her like trying to figure out what to tell me. And she just basically was like, "Please meet my friend out there that works for Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice." So I met with him, and he started working on these issues since 1978, which is the year I was born. And just totally blew my mind as to what's actually there, how close me and my family actually are, and also the fact that, you know, we're pretty conscious about what we eat, and on top of that, one of my sons has a lot of allergies, so we were avoiding wheat and dairy and corn syrup and all kinds of stuff, but here we were living right next to an ex-nuclear Superfund site. So I saw a few months after that, a neighbor of mine, it turned out, had written a petition against a toll road that they wanted to build on the site. And I feel like I should... Do I need to talk about Rocky Flats a little bit first?
About what it is?
Yeah.
And the history? Sure, yeah.
So I found out in talking with Leroy that this site produced all of the nuclear bombs during the Cold War. 70,000 plutonium pits. And I'd heard the reference to these plutonium pits or buttons or triggers. Actually, that was the word I had heard used, was they just built the triggers. And I was like, "Oh, that's weird. So even building the triggers can be contaminating." But to me, that word trigger meant like, I just imagined a gun. I thought it was like some sort of electrical something. I didn't understand that what they were referring to was the part of the nuclear bomb that explodes. The part of the bomb that
explodes. The particle that splits.
Yes.
That is split.
And, yes.
Yeah.
So, and also that these are triggers for hydrogen bombs, because you need an atomic explosion that sets off the next explosion. So, how crazy also to find that out, you know? And like, what is it? Oh, yeah, they were just doing triggers out there. Well, yes, the trigger is the part of the bomb that explodes. That's not what I thought was out mm-hmm. there. And people don't use the term bomb because, you know, the shell and the metal was manufactured elsewhere. Mm. But to me, the important part was manufactured
That's
here.
Probably no more harmful than manufacturing cars or something. I mean, like,
exactly.
It's that level of pollution.
Which is what I thought maybe was there, maybe a little bit of tainted with plutonium. The other thing is that the threat from the plutonium is breathing it in or swallowing it, ingesting it, or getting it into a cut. Which also is different, because the way that people talk about radiation, you think that you're just exposing yourself to, you know, the equivalent of a chest x-ray or the equivalent of a dental x-ray every year or something like that. But it's not like that. You know, you have a group of people standing out there every day for 5 days and nobody gets any harm from it. And then somebody comes and visits and walks through the property and inhales some plutonium, and that's a lethal dose. So it's really random. It's also random how it gets, where it gets lodged in your body, which I think has also been part of the difficulty. You can't look at our area and say, okay, people have more lung cancer here. Because people have, if you combine it all and look at like anomalous health problems with autoimmune diseases, brain cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, salivary gland cancer, if you look at that stuff and put it all together, then maybe we'd be above normal. But the thing is that it acts differently in different people's bodies, and it gets it gravitates to different places in people's bodies. It looks like in children a lot of times it gravitates to the reproductive organs. So we know that it's there, and if you learn about the history of the site, that's the other thing. You start learning about the history of the site, and you're horrified. So I started learning about the history of the site, all the contamination that happened, all of the cover-ups, all of the accidents. There were some serious fires that happened out there. And I started thinking I need to get involved, and I saw that they wanted to build a toll road going over what we know is some of the most contaminated part of the site. And so I signed the petition, and then I like posted it on social media with my friends saying, we have to stop this toll road because if they build a toll road, soon there's going to be housing and businesses out there. You don't have a road in the middle of nowhere. A few months later, I was driving down to Denver and went that back way, right by Rocky Flats, and I saw the signs for Candelas, and I didn't quite know what it was, but I went and I looked, and it turned out that I was wrong, which is rare. It turns out that I was wrong, and that they'd already started on the housing, and the housing and businesses come first, and then they're going to build the toll road. And so in searching around about it, I realized that no one could find out about this housing development. It's called Candelas. No one could find out about the controversy. Like, if you look at it or you Google it, there was nothing that said there's a controversy. So I decided that I was going to have to do something about it and raise awareness. So I started Candelas Glows. And I did CandelasGlows.com and started a Facebook page and then decided to go to the grand opening events with some friends and some hazmat suits and some signs and some information, some flyers with the timeline about the history of the plant. And we went out there a couple of times for a couple of grand opening events that they had, and I partly named it Candelas Glows. Sorry if I'm all over the place.
No, it's great. It's great.
I partly named it Candelas Glows because in Spanish, Candelas is like candle, so it's Candelas Glows. Well, it turns out that the site was, when it was in operation, the plant was shut down by an FBI and EPA raid. It's the only time in history that that's happened, where government agencies have gone and raided another government agency like that. And it turns out that the FBI internally referred to the raid as Operation Desert Glow.
Wow.
So, and it turns out that people who grew up in the area have all kinds of jokes and inside, you know, about references
things
about glowing.
In the dark and, yeah.
So, we started Candelas Glows. We went out there a couple of times. We got a much bigger response than I could have imagined because it turns out this is such a big part of Colorado history. So I didn't really realize what I was tapping into and the richness of people's experiences with this. There's people who, you know, protested to bring awareness about it, which is partly why the FBI and EPA got involved. There were workers. There are people that worked at this cleanup that they attempted to do. So it turned out that, and there were all the neighbors that were concerned and had either been sick or their family member had been sick or their neighbors had been sick. So the response that we got was crazy, and some of it was really intense, you know, and I don't think that I'd really been prepared for that either, where, you know, we went out there, held some signs, wanted it to be fun, and we'd had, like, two people come up to us that first time and ask us if we thought that their thyroid cancer came from Rocky Flats, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, I at that point, I was certainly no expert on the history of the site or how this stuff works, and you know, by the time that started happening on a regular basis, I started saying, you know, I don't know, but you're not the first person to ask me that. And I have started to realize that a lot of people in this area have thyroid issues. But there's other things, too, and there's also cancers, and some cancers that people don't feel comfortable talking about, you know, like reproductive cancers, especially in children. People don't want to talk about that, and people feel ashamed, I think. So we had that. We also had intense interactions with workers, you know, workers who at first maybe even seemed mad at us and then suddenly would change their tune and be like, you know, in a still kind of an aggressive way sometimes, but they'd be like, you have to stop this and you have to stop people from living out here. This is really dangerous. In fact, you probably shouldn't even be standing out here to raise awareness, right? Not just like, don't live here. They're like, walking around here is not safe.
Wow.
So we also had workers come to us and tell us that what we were concerned about was only the tip of the iceberg. And I did go and look at that time and saw that the Department of Labor said there's over 1,000 carcinogens at the site. So plutonium is just one of a thousand of things that we know cause cancer there. So that was that. I've got three kids. I've got a job. I'm a pretty busy person. You know, I didn't intend for this to take up so much of my time. But then the developers of the development, Candelas, threatened to sue me for millions of dollars if I didn't shut up. And
on what grounds? For defamation or for intent to...
For defamation and also for copyright infringement, because I had taken their invitations to the grand opening events and put nuclear symbols on the sides.
Oh.
And then repassed them out.
Oh.
And so I had to go and find a lawyer, which I did, thank goodness, with the help of my brother. It was amazing because in the process of responding to the cease and desist about work I'd already been doing because I was concerned, once I had to dot every I and cross every T about everything I had said about the site, then I was horrified. It was way worse than I thought. You know, I was already concerned enough to go out there and start talking to people I didn't know about these issues, and then it turned out that I didn't even realize how bad it was. So, we responded to the cease and desist, and also with the copyright infringement, our lawyer really took them to town with that. It turns out that not only do you have freedom of speech, and you know that's what I had figured in from the get-go, is that I have protected speech, but it turns out that when it's an issue of public health, you actually have extra protected free speech.
And you remixed it. I mean, it's fair use if you changed it 20%, which I don't know if you're probably close if you only added the symbols, but
yeah, and their logo,
it's just a remix,
logo is a couple of lines, so also there was the argument that their logo wouldn't hold up in court because it's a geometric shape and you can't copyright a geometric shape. So there was that, and then there was also some of the they sent me paperwork with the cease and desist that was supposed to prove that it was safe. And the paperwork all talked about a type of radiation that no one is claiming is out there. And so that's when I also realized that this was really deep, was that they're giving people information, saying sort of what I was saying before, that this is just like getting a dental x-ray or something, when the issue is the alpha radiation. And alpha radiation is very difficult to detect. It's really hard to find.
But it's also the most harmful.
And it's
right?
also very harmful.
Gamma's what tends to dwell kind of around, that you pick up with a...
Geiger counter.
Thank you, a Geiger counter.
Yeah.
But the alpha and the beta particles are more harmful.
Right. So, and I don't think they... And also in the testing that they showed us, they weren't taking into account children and people, like, playing very close to the Earth. They were talking about, you know, maybe adults standing up nearby, but... We're talking about children are going to be playing in this dirt, and this dirt's going to be kicked up for all of us to breathe. So, what I like to talk about with Rocky Flats is that it was a design mistake. Am I talking too much?
No, yet? It's perfect. It's perfect. I'm just checking.
So, Rocky Flats was a design mistake. When they decided to build the plant, they knew that they needed to be downwind of any metropolitan area. They wanted to keep the public safe. They knew that it was going to be dangerous. So, they flew contractors out to Denver. And the airport at the time was Stapleton, and the contractors took the wind measurements there at Stapleton. Well, at Stapleton, the wind blows west. So they said we need to be west of Denver so that the wind will blow from Denver to the plant and then into the mountains and keep everybody safe. Well, what they didn't realize was that at the foothills, which is where Rocky Flats is, the wind comes off of the mountains and blows really, really hard east.
So and now, so hard that now there's wind turbines there, right?
Yeah, so hard that now it's a testing site for wind turbines. And they have a renewable energy lab there testing wind. What's scary is, I mean, the wind is just, I mean, it's the windiest place I've ever lived. I've had my windshield smashed from wind twice, just having it parked in my driveway and come out in the morning after a really windy night. And at first I thought it was vandalism. The first time it happened, I was like, oh my God, somebody smashed our windshield. This was before I had gotten involved with Candela's Gloves, but still I was like, I can't, you know, some ruffians came and smashed our windshield. But when I called the windshield repair place, they were like, oh yeah, we've gotten tons of calls in your neighborhood because it was so windy last night. It must have been really bad, huh? And I was like, huh. You think the wind could have done this? I was like, I don't see how the wind can do it. And she was like, oh, it happens all the time, especially in your area. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And then it happened again, I think it was last year. And we went up there once to take pictures and saw a tractor get a window smashed. So the wind is intense, and they sighted it in the wrong place. So everything that came after that was just compounding this first mistake, which is that they sighted the plant where they didn't intend to, which is upwind of a major metropolitan area. So the wind's been blowing towards, you know, Denver is right there. It's about 16 miles away.
Mm-hmm. That's very close, too.
It's very close.
I mean, that's yeah. I picture things like this happening at least, you know, 100 miles outside of a major area. A place that was already a major area, like Denver in the 50s when this was sighted, 40s. Wow, yeah, that's just insane.
Yeah, and it's good because they thought they were going to be in a safe location. They thought they were upwind. They thought they were downwind of Denver. So, you know, after that, every time they had a spill and every time they had a fire and every time they did midnight incineration of plutonium waste, it was all blowing towards these metropolitan areas. And Denver is there. And I wish that Denverites would sort of wake up and realize that this is a Denver issue, because I think that historically Boulder has taken on such a big role in talking about Rocky Flats. The Denverites think of it as a Boulder issue, but to me it's much more of a Denver issue than Boulder. Mm-hmm. And we're also talking about Arvada, Westminster, Broomfield, Thornton, North Glen, Lakewood, Superior. Yeah.
So a pretty wide area.
A wide area.
Millions of people, right?
And a lot of us living here because we think it's like the healthy, beautiful place to live. Colorado's gorgeous. You should see the site where they're putting these houses up at Candelas. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. You walk out there and you're like, I want to live here. You would want to live there if you saw it. You can see the Flatirons from there. You can see to Denver. You can see this lake, which is contaminated, Stanley Lake. And the thing about this radioactive contamination is that you can't smell it, you can't taste it, you can't see it. So there's other places that are less contaminated but maybe stinky that people would never live or pay $500,000 to live there.
Yeah.
But here the stuff is invisible, so people are paying to live there.
And they're high-end homes. That brings us kind of to that. I mean, we're talking about in the upper hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you were saying there's a lot of people incoming to this area, similar to my area right now, from California, people who are partially climate refugees who probably aren't casting themselves that way, but Colorado looks pretty good in a lot of ways. Yeah. So this isn't a poor community that this problem's getting dumped on. It's wealthy people, which kind of turns the tables on that usual story.
It does.
Has that changed the dynamics around organizing on this at all?
Or? I think it has changed the dynamics around organizing because people think it must be clean if the houses are expensive. You know, where some of the more traditional environmental justice stuff comes in is where some of that water is going to some of the poorer cities in this metro area. And also the workers there. Every time I've gone out, I have spoken with a lot of Latino and Spanish-speaking people doing the construction who probably have no idea what they're digging in. You know, probably are going home and not realizing that their clothes might be contaminated. So there's that. But there's a lot of people who just, you know, it's this reverse thinking of it must be okay because they're building, not is it okay to build. Part of the great response that I was saying we got when we first went out there with the neighbors was so many people were like, yeah, this didn't feel right to me, or I didn't know how they could do this, or there used to be a no-build zone there. They were like, I thought this was a no-build zone. I don't understand how people can build here. So there's been a lot of, like, hidden concern, but no one had really vocalized it. So I think that's part of what happened, too, is that once we started saying, hey, this is scary, you know, thousands of people basically were like, yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I just, you know, didn't know how to say something about it, you know? So that's been a big part of it. The other part that's a little bit weird, and is another aspect that is kind of a surprise, is that the Department of Energy transferred the majority of the site to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So the core of the site is still a nuclear Superfund site owned by the Department of Energy and will always remain that way. But the perimeter of the site is now a wildlife refuge. So a lot of people moving to the area, some of them don't even know the name of the place, because the developers are referring to it as a national wildlife refuge. So it's like, come to Colorado and live in this beautiful place right next to a wildlife refuge with tons of open space and views to the Flatirons and the mountains. So
Wow.
You know, so it's in a, so it's put us in a weird place. I would love to be able to work more with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and help them really realize what they've gotten, because they can't treat the site the way that they've treated other places that you might want to protect animals from human development. Like, it's too late to do that at Rocky mm-hmm. Flats. And one instance of this was they tried to instigate a 700-acre controlled burn at Rocky Flats this spring. It's part of their work plan, and if you do have pristine prairie ecology, normally that makes sense. You want to burn it. A lot of the plants depend on fire, and some of the, you know, if you're getting a lot of weeds and whatnot, fire will kill the weeds but keep some of the good plants that you want out mm-hmm. there. So they wanted to burn 700 acres, and
with plutonium in the soil.
With plutonium
still.
And a thousand other, there's arsenic, there's cyanide, and actually the arsenic levels have been very high lately in the area, so in Alpha Rocky Flats. So, and the uranium, there's high levels of uranium in the water there that they're testing. So, yeah, so they wanted to disturb the soil and burn 700 acres. You just said the word climate refugees. I was like, we're going to be wildlife refuge refugees. And if they burn, we were going to leave town for an unknown amount of time. There was no way I was going to have my children. And I was going to call all of my friends and family and say, you can do what you like, but just so you know, I'm going to go to the mountains for a week while this burns, because I cannot be breathing this air in. They did a test fire several years ago, I think in 2000 or 2004, and they only got to burn about 50 acres before people from all over the Front Range, from north to south along the Front Range, started calling in complaining about the fire and also complaining of a metallic taste in their mouth, which is a sign of plutonium, actually. It's a sign of, I guess the workers used to call it metal mouth. So if you have metal mouth, you know that you've been exposed, because you start to taste this metal in your mouth, and that means that you've been exposed to the plutonium, which is mostly invisible and tasteless, but you get this sort of aftertaste. So they said they were going to burn 700 acres. We were ready to just, you know, I mean, we didn't know what to do with ourselves. So we started to fight it and, beg basically Fish and Wildlife not to do this. And it's just an interesting place. As someone who, you know, kind of cares about the environment, you'd think that I'm always on the side of whatever Fish and Wildlife would be doing, right? But here is a case where we're actually at quite odds. And I don't think I'm necessarily at odds with them, because I think they've inherited a problem that they didn't really realize they were inheriting to the extent, mm-hmm. I think. You know, that would be something to talk to them about. But what was interesting about it were, there are people that had previously said, you're wrong, Rocky Flats has been cleaned up, it's relatively safe for people to live nearby, it should be fine. A lot of those same people said, well, yeah, it's cleaned up, but not that clean. You can't do a 700-acre burn. So people that had maybe been our opposition before became our allies with that, and we were able to stop the burn. So the other thing I'd like to see is, when the site is shut down permanently, we need some sort of institute to oversee it, because, you know, what if there's a natural disaster out there? You know, what's funny is, we were saying before, like, what if there's a flood? Well, we had floods. I don't know if you saw mm-hmm. Boulder in the news. We had a, you know, 1,000-year flood at Rocky mm-hmm. Flats, and the site is still reeling from it. We have mm-hmm. slumping happening. Some of the clay caps that cover some of the old landfills that are on site wore away. They've been fixed supposedly now, and I'm not exactly sure what happened with the water.
Did the fires come this far east?
That's a great question.
A couple summers ago, when they were really bad.
There have been some little fires that have gotten, you know, on or close to Rocky Flats in the past. But this was part of the concern about the burn that they wanted to do on 700 acres, because their argument is, well, we can either burn 700 acres on purpose now, or wait for the place to catch on fire and not be in control of how much burns, which is a real concern. I don't want to see it go up in flames. And
but if they did that controlled burn, you'd probably want a full evacuation and something like that.
But they're not going to say that. In fact, Fish and Wildlife had been told that the site was clean, so that's the information they went off of, and they weren't even going to give their firefighters special equipment. They were going to be using regular equipment. So we were concerned about those workers as well. You know, so what if there's a fire? What if there's a drought? What if there was a dust bowl? Imagine a dust bowl at Rocky Flats. especially with the wind that's out there, you know, I mean, that 3 feet of soil that's supposed to be covering.
You could go through downtown Denver, right?
On day one, first 3 feet, you know, and there's a certain depth to where unlimited amounts of toxins or of radioactivity is allowed to be on site. You know, and you could get down to that level pretty quickly between some burrowing animals and some, you know, or even in the future if people don't know and start trying to plow that place up. We don't know. That's why we need a memorial to protect ourselves.
Oh, I just love that idea of a memorial there that you heard Michelle talking about at the end. It ties back to why I'm on this road trip this summer. If we don't preserve stories of mistakes and triumphs in the past, we really can't learn from those mistakes or from those triumphs. So that's all the time I have this week, but check out my blog at www.truthscout.net for full interviews as they're published, links to the people you heard here today, and much more. You've been listening to Praxis on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.